Welcome back to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still on the line from Idaho is Sarah. Sarah, we're going to talk now in our final segment about the new Afghanistan plan.
I just have some numbers. Currently, there are 32,800 troops in Afghanistan. Obama announced today that by the end of this year, calendar year 2014, he'd like to get that to just under 10,000, 9,800. And by the end of 2015, cut that number in half, and basically fully out by the end of 2016, with only just embassy type staff and troops for defense.
Right. And Reuters notes that that decision, quote, means that Obama will leave office in early 2017, having extricated the country from the longest war in U.S. history, as well as in his first term, ending the war in Iraq. So it went on for too long. He extended them for too long, but at least he's going to make a solid effort to get us out. And let's hope that nothing changes this plan.
Yeah. Barring any of situations, it looks like we're reaching the end of our involvement in Afghanistan, which lasted too long.
Right. Now, so another thing from this Reuters article says, prompted criticism from Republicans, that the hard-fought gains made against the Taliban could be lost in much the same way that sectarian violence returned to Iraq after the U.S. withdrawal. Now, I think that's a partially correct point and a partially very incorrect point. So I think I had talked in the fall about the situation in Iraq and kind of the devolution that happened there. In fact, some of the same cities that were most heavily contested by the United States ended up then re-falling to the same groups. But then everyone just, you know, posse'd up in Iraq and went after them, which indicates that they have some level of dealing with it to the extent that they need to. But the other issue is that it's kind of this open-ended attitude to the whole thing, right? The Iraq thing with the surge specifically was that President Bush said, we're going to increase the troops dramatically and get to a point where we've created enough peace that there can be a political solution to this situation, right? That they can get their government up and running and everything and then be able to be self-sufficient. And then the conservatives and specifically the Republicans in general, especially in the establishment, all said the surge was a huge success. Well, no, it wasn't, because it doesn't matter about what happened to the violence levels even temporarily, because that was never the goal of the surge. The explicit goal of the surge was to create space for a political solution, and then there was no political solution. And so after a while, President Obama just said, okay, clearly nothing's happening here. We gave it a shot, probably more than what we should have devoted to it, and then we left. Because you can't, at a certain point, you can't fix these things, right? It's a sunk cost issue that says, okay, I have put in all this effort and energy, and yes, it's going to be lost, but it's gone either way. Whether we stay or whether we leave, we can't get back that effort that we already put in. So that can't really be part of the consideration. I mean, they say, oh, but you know, it's just a little bit more, just a little bit more. Yeah, but it never is. It never is, unless there's a sustainable political and economic plan that gets these countries out of it, right? Iraq is actually in a better position than Afghanistan in so many ways. I mean, they've got oil now back up to production levels from before the Gulf War. And that's not necessarily consistent, but that's a huge like output level. They've at least, and they've got disputes over how to allocate the resources from that, but at least they've got a functioning resources thing. As Greg and I had done a segment several months back, you know, Afghanistan, their resources are basically poppy. There's, you know, theorized that there's various other, you know, natural elements in the ground or whatever, heavy metals, things that could be valuable in cell phone production or whatever. And China's tried to look into that. But China also gets the resources from African countries that aren't necessarily stable. And their solution is to basically create these highly, highly militarized enclaves with PLA, People's Liberation Army troops, that specifically just camp out at the site. And the United States, as much as, you know, leftist, liberal, you know, ultra-liberal people will say, oh, it's just a war for oil or whatever, which I mean, maybe it is. But like the United States never just creates the appearance of blatantly going in to get resources where China is not really concerned about that. So they're like, yeah, no, we definitely are here for the copper and nothing else. And then everyone just kind of leaves them alone because it's like, okay, well, they're not bothering us and they're not like oppressing us or trying to tell us how to run our government. So, and also we don't want to get into a fight with the largest infantry force in the world. So let's just leave them alone and go back to fighting each other. But nobody else is going to be able to get the resources out, and China probably isn't either. So they've just got poppy as their main crop, and then that's illegal, and the United States wants to burn down all the fields. Or probably not burn, because that'd get real funky real fast. But this Afghanistan situation is not going to be resolved as long as there's no political solution, and there can't be a political solution when there's no resources. Because if you really boil down, I mean, it's like what we talked about with the Nigeria segment on the last episode with our guest expert, right, is that almost all of these things boil down to a resources allocation conflict at their roots. Like, that's a lot of what the political disputes are about. It's a little more complicated in Afghanistan in the sense that it's one of the highest concentrations in the world of people that belong to a different ethno-linguistic group than their neighbors, right? So if you look at maps of Central Asia, the like sheer number of people, it's like, oh, this group has like 500 speakers or something, and they don't speak the language that anybody else speaks, right? That's going to obviously fragment your society. But at the end of the day, the long-term security issue here is at its core economic in the sense of the average people not having the resources they need. And then it's also economic in the sense that it takes money to run a security service and security force. Even if you can get the actual troops to show up, which has been a persistent problem in Afghanistan, you have to have money to pay them. And the Afghan government doesn't have money unless it's just infinitely checks being written by the United States or being replaced by international forces, including the U.S. forces. Those are the only real solutions to the security situation. So yes, the Republicans are correct in the sense that this plan probably does mean that Afghanistan collapses. It may not, because it's very hard to predict what the outcomes are. But yeah, it may fall to become a new Taliban safe haven. That's a definite possibility, and that would be unfortunate. But the notion that us staying there indefinitely is a valid option, and B is definitely going to prevent that, is not necessarily accurate either. That's kind of the crux of the matter here, which is that we can't stay forever. So at some point, we have to stop holding their hand and just see what happens. It might get bit off by an alligator, but we can't stop that from happening. So we're going to have to see what happens, but we can't just keep troops there indefinitely. Sarah, what was your take on this?
It's way overdue. I feel that, you know, we've been involved in Afghanistan for way too long. Who even knows what effects we're really having, positive or negative? I mean, we're keeping Afghanistan kind of afloat at the moment, and it's time to see what happens without us around. The time for intervention is past. It's way past.
You can go in and punish the people who did a certain thing, which we did, and then you can further commit to say we're going to build a nation state, a modern nation state where no one else has ever managed to build a modern nation state, including multiple efforts by some of history's biggest and baddest military empires. And then you can also further say, oh, just kidding, we're going to leave and go do something else in a different country and then come back like 6 years later.
Right. It's just there's never been a clear plan of action. You can't start a war on terror and then, which is a nebulous thing, and pinpoint terror apparently in Afghanistan and expect good things to come of that. It was poorly thought out and poorly, I don't know, there was no exit plan, mission statement essentially, and Badabing, there's still troops there. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it's been way too long. I mean, it is 2014 at this point, and well over a decade for something that we haven't been seeing a lot of change in the situation in the past years. There's just been throwing money and troops at it.
Right. And from the perspective of the United States, it doesn't necessarily, well, it, I'll say it doesn't benefit us to just stay there indefinitely. There's no gain for the United States to be made by that. And they say, oh, well, you know, we can't betray the people, whatever. Well, again, we shouldn't have made that commitment in the first place. It was an unkeepable commitment. Don't make promises that it's basically impossible for you to actually execute, and definitely don't make them if you're not going to be serious about trying, which we weren't. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, well, it does have to do with the U.S. because it's going to create a terrorist safe haven or whatever. Well, okay, are you saying that Afghanistan's not essentially a terrorist safe haven right now, even with troops there? I mean, you know, yeah, some of these countries become terrorist safe havens, and that's a huge bummer. But you can't prevent that from happening everywhere, and you can only just try to limit it. And I think also from the U.S. perspective, and this is solely looking at it from the U.S. perspective with no consideration for how it affects anyone else, which is not something I normally would, you know, entertain, but just for the purposes of discussion, I would guess that what we're going to see is that if it does turn into some, you know, super terrorist safe haven or whatever, like it did in the 90s, keep in mind that we're not operating in the 90s anymore. As much as Arsenio Hall has a show back on television now, we are not, in fact, actually in the 90s. The technology has improved. We have drones now, which I'm not a big fan of, but I bet we're going to see a lot more use of those in Afghanistan like we do in Pakistan, which we are not on the ground in. And Yemen, same situation there. We're probably going to continue to see U.S. drones being used in Afghanistan. That's going to bring a lot of problems with it. But again, solely looking from the U.S. military perspective, if the goal is a war on terror, it doesn't require us to be permanently in Afghanistan. We can continue to do these things from the sky, essentially. Second approach that the U.S. is probably going to start considering taking are these really annoying whack-a-mole strategies that are annoying because they look like they're not really accomplishing much, because they probably aren't, and they do, you know, expend a whole bunch of money and time and political capital, and they cause various backlashes. But again, solely looking from the United States perspective, this is a strategy that's been argued for by various interventionist people and political theorists and international relations folks and so forth, saying that countries shouldn't invade and occupy and try to rebuild these things. They should just go in, take out whoever's the problem, you know, blow them up or whatever, and then leave. And then if the problem recurs, go back in and do it again. Which, again, not the greatest long-term strategy, but if you're just looking at it from the United States war on terror perspective, that's probably going to be a more effective and expensive, but not as expensive by an order of magnitude, way of doing things. And we're actually seeing France pursuing a similar policy as well. This is something that I talked a lot about off-air, actually, with my guest last week, or 2 weeks ago, which was that France has announced that they're going to have a permanent rapid reaction strike force stationed in the Sahel region of West Africa. And that's that semi-desert region south of the Sahara that has a lot of terrorist activities. A lot of that has to do with resource allocation and so forth, particularly in countries like Niger and Mali, the Tuareg peoples. That's something that that she and I have talked about on previous interviews. But the idea there is that instead of trying to permanently reoccupy all of its West African colonies, France is going to have 4,000 troops stationed in its former colonies in, I think, 6 different countries. One of them was going to be Mali. But, you know, they weren't going to be stationed in, like, active patrolling roles or anything. They were just going to be at bases. And then if there was a situation, and in the West African case, it's going to be usually that some French workers at the uranium mines or companies or in Niger or at the oil refineries in southern Algeria, that if they get kidnapped, which happens fairly frequently, that there would be French military presence already in the region able to respond within hours. The analogous situation from the United States perspective would essentially be the raid into Pakistan at Abbottabad to get Osama bin Laden, which you can criticize that, but just for the purposes of comparison, that's an example of where you have an extremely small, very limited engagement that basically lasted, you know, 38 minutes on the ground plus flight time in and out, that just goes in, quote unquote, solves a problem and then leaves. There's plenty of reasons to disagree with that from an international relations standpoint or an international norms standpoint or any of those kind of things. But in terms of the military security perspective, it demonstrates that it is possible to do a rapid reaction kind of approach to these quote unquote problem situations that arise without actually invading and occupying a state. It's not necessarily the best for those particular countries. But as Sarah was saying, are we really actually benefiting these people by occupying Afghanistan permanently? So I suspect that we're going to see a lot more of that. Any thoughts on that particular approach, Sarah?
That sounds very interesting, having a dedicated force for flare-ups. It would definitely be more efficient from, you know, a logistics standpoint to not entrench oneself into a foreign land, you know, for years upon years at a time. It was just strange how Afghanistan, at one point we had up to 100,000 troops in the nation, and you know, we had these varying numbers, and it was hard to say, you know, whether there was a surge, and it didn't seem all that effective. And if there were a strike force that went in, bada bing, bada boom, you know, that would be a whole lot more cost effective and manpower efficient. And then it brings its own set of policy issues, but at least you don't have trillions upon trillions of dollars basically getting wasted.
And lives.
It was just Memorial Day. I had a classmate who was killed in Afghanistan in 2005. And I think a lot of people knew at least one person who's died in the past decade.
Right. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me, filling in this week for Greg and Nate on Arsenal for Democracy.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from arsenalfordemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at arsenalfordemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.